foggy outside. All the planes have been grounded. Ain't the fire inside? Let's all go stand around it.
Funny, I've been there, and you've been here. We ain't had no time to drink that beer.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sandman Podcast. I am your host, Brian W. Tosh. Joined, as always, by our resident fact checker, I'm sorry, hack checker, Oliver Fullington.
What up?
Hey.
My co-host and producer, Tyler Fullington, El Hilo del Hack, and the man, the myth, the legend, the hardcore icon, the man whose stories got stories, the Sandman. Hack, how you doing today?
What up, people?
What's going on, man? I know yesterday, just like everybody else out there probably, you were watching the Masters, Hack. I know you're a huge golf fan.
Yeah, living it.
What did you think about Scottie Scheffler pulling away on the back nine yesterday?
I don't know. He has no personality for me. It's like, I watch it, but I watch it. Right now I'm watching it because I'm betting on somebody, and I'm hoping they're not going to do something stupid or do something great. But it's not like when Tiger's in it, it's a totally different animal, the Masters.
Yeah.
To me, there's no kid coming up that I'm just loving at all.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I loved seeing Scotty get after it yesterday, really take over. The leaderboard was jam packed yesterday. You had four guys tied at one point of 6 or 7 under.
A couple points.
Yeah, a couple points, and then next thing you know, Scotty just pulled away from everybody and really capped it off.
His irons were incredible. His approach shots to the greens were unbelievable yesterday.
Yeah, and then to come in the weekend, I know on Thursday he was the favorite, and then just to come in as the favorite and then win the tournament, I mean.
Well, that was pretty much, you called it a couple weeks ago. You said he'd have to be your favorite going into the Masters.
Yeah, okay. So did Vegas think he was the favorite, too.
Oh, cool. Yeah, sorry. I'm giving a guy a little bit of credit.
Giving
a guy a little bit of
credit. So what? Still get a little plus, man.
Dude, that hasn't been a number since, like, Tiger days. Like,
yeah. Well, man, it's two out of the last 3 years also. That's pretty damn incredible.
And you got to give him credit because, dude, his wife could have popped at any minute. Like, she was ready to give birth to their first kid, and, like, that was probably on his mind, too. But luckily, she held off.
Yeah, luckily she held off, and so did he.
I mean, first of all, if I was his handler, I'd be like, I don't care if he had quadruplets. Do not tell him he's on the 15th hole right now, coming to win his second in 3 years.
Yeah, you got priorities.
There is no way I would tell him that.
Yeah, you got to get that green jacket, though. So that was really cool yesterday, and congratulations to Scottie Scheffler pulling away for his second green jacket yesterday. Huge purse as well, and yeah. Looks amazing.
Yeah, what was the total purse? They upped it, right, because of Liv?
Yeah, the total purse, I think, for the event was something like $18 million, I think.
Yeah, and it used to be the half that.
Yeah.
They had to get the ball game.
PGA's got to step their game
I
up.
I think
with
he did like 3-6 or something like that.
What, just
like,
for the win.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be like half that a couple years ago.
It was
like
3-something.
No, it was awesome to see. Love to see that. The other big event of the weekend was the UFC 300 show. I know Ty, Ollie, you guys were watching. It's certainly insane to think where they've come in the 21 years that they've been around or so. I'm sorry, actually, they were 93, so it's 30. Is it 31 years? I can't do math.
Something like that, yeah.
I can't do math. Anyway, they've been around since 1993 was their first show. I thought UFC 300 was a fantastic show, top to bottom. I'm not the biggest MMA guy, but those fights were awesome on Saturday. The crowd was great. I saw a lot of great finishes, obviously. The big Pereira knockout and Max Holloway as well. That was like an all-time knockout.
Dude, that's... It's probably the best knockout I've ever seen, given the circumstances and being with 1 second left in the fight.
A buzzer-beater knockout like
and
that.
And just, Gaethje was just sleeping. Like, he didn't move. They rolled him over.
I was worried about him.
He's just laying there like,
Yeah, it was.
The only other knockout I can think of that was like that is, I don't know if you remember, it was a couple fights ago when Garbrandt knocked a dude out literally at the buzzer. Like the horn went off. It was like, boom.
And I do remember that.
And yeah. Like 24-59. Is this a 5-round, 5-minute fight? And guys are getting KO'd the very last second?
Yeah. Last night, like, dude, it was within like 2 seconds because Holloway, it was the very last round. And he's like, let's go, stand here in the middle. Like, let's just go. The last, like, 10 seconds, they went, boom, clean out. Holloway.
Like, face plant.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
it was
with 2 seconds
and
left.
Holloway was winning the fight handily. Like, he didn't have to do that.
No, he didn't have to trade and bang.
No.
He chose to because, I mean, it was
the BMF title. Well, he's bombing now. Hey, who won the 300 Gs for the fight of the...
Max Holloway got double. It was fight of the night and knockout of the night. He got 600 Gs for the last second knockout. Yeah.
Wow. And the win.
Yeah, yep. And the win.
And the belt. He took the belt from the other guy, too. So all that.
Wow, he's still partying right now.
Still not enough money. Pay up, Dana. Pay these guys.
Literally.
More True
money.
That.
These guys
True
need more
that.
Money.
How much that company's worth compared to what they're paying the guys is ridiculous.
Yeah, but I did want to ask you, Hack, about kind of like the infancy of MMA. Like, what did the boys in the business think about mixed martial arts when it first started and kind of just...
Nobody even really talks about it.
You guys,
it's never really been a big conversation in the locker room to me at all.
Okay. No, like when it first, even when it first started, or like when it first came out.
You got to understand when it first started. All right, Ollie, get ready for your first hack check.
Okay, all right.
Now, but like, one, did Royce Gracie win, and two, did the other Gracie win, and the Gracies were winning, and it wasn't really, it didn't really look great, it wasn't really entertaining the way they won, but all the early matches were, because they'd have a 400-pound Japanese sumo wrestler against a Muay Thai fighter that's 190 pounds and stuff like that, you know what I mean? So it was interesting in the carnival act of it early.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, because like the early stages of it, they didn't have any like weight classes. It wasn't, the guys really just had like one discipline of fighting. Nowadays, when guys are out there, everybody has all the different disciplines of fighting. They're almost like too balanced and too much the same. You used to see like a lot of the cool, like, oh, this guy is, he's going to trade versus a wrestler, or this guy.
Yeah, the Brazilian cockfighter. They used to have crazy names for these different kind of fighters, from this guy, you're like, what?
You need to have it all to reach the top in MMA.
You have to.
UFC. You have to have it all.
Yeah, you can't have any holes
in
your game.
You can only do so much as a great wrestler or a great striker, because once you come across one who's great at the other or great at everything,
yeah,
you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah,
but I also think coaches are like super important to those guys more than, like, I can't use a professional wrestler, and it's hard to say. Like a football player, his coach, like your offensive line coach, is going to say this. It's all like schemes. But a fighting coach is going to tell you, this guy's got his hand exactly here on your body. He's going to shoot for this. If you do this, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think those guys are a lot more important. But I don't like the fact that none of them had made up their own language. Because if I'm a coach and you're a coach and Oliver and Ty are fighting, I can hear exactly what you're yelling him to do. I'd rather have some covert words that would mean something so you don't know I'm trying to get him to shoot the half or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's so many different languages spoken in the UFC that half of the time it doesn't matter.
If I'm fighting a dude, my coaches will be trained to know what certain words are.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Yeah, you want some signals. You want, yeah.
Yeah, here comes the guy with the pig Latin corner.
Wrestlers got the same language.
Yeah, kayfabe and stuff.
So, Hack, so you said you didn't really think of it much, but I don't know how long it was into the UFC or after that Shamrock was making the jump. And, I mean, I don't know what your thought on
that. Shamrock was the man.
Right.
Yeah, Shamrock was the first rock star. All right, Royce Gracie won 3 titles or whatever, but Shamrock was the rock star.
Yeah.
And I loved it. All right, another hack check. When ECW first went up to WWE at the Manhattan Center, when Sabu jumped off the
Raw ladders,
those ladders, I'm pretty sure that would have been 96 or so, right around the same time that what's his name's jumping off in the MMA.
Shamrock. Shamrock was already established in MMA by that point. Yeah,
I went up to him to put him over. He's like, "Sammy, you're my favorite wrestler ever."
Wow.
Yeah, it was. I was shocked.
Okay.
Utterly shocked.
Yeah, Shamrock has a very interesting story. If you guys haven't, definitely check out the Jonathan Snowden book on Ken Shamrock. It's a really great book, and he actually was trained in pro wrestling first prior to getting involved in MMA.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that, and some of the Japanese fights.
Well, he was doing like shoot fighting in Japan or something.
He was, and a lot of them were work shoots, like in Pancrase, and some of them were actually shoots, and some of them were works. Knowing those fights, whether or not
'80, '90, that Pancrase was great stuff. I don't call that being trained in professional wrestling for the WWWF.
Yeah.
That's a totally different breed of animal.
Right. That's the like the work shoot style. Yeah. And they got him involved.
You're laying it in.
They got
every
him.
Night.
When he went to WWF, they had him go to the Heart Dungeon to get trained properly for their version of pro wrestling too. So Ken Shamrock, obviously legend in the business of both businesses. So
hey, and how many guys can it's like it's the same thing with guys that are like Kurt Angle, but he's better than all the rest of the guys. And then you have your Steiner brothers and stuff like that. But there's so many guys that have been great at collegiate wrestling and then cannot flip the switch to the other one.
Right.
Shamrock goes into the same thing and he flips it no problem.
Yeah.
And he just fits right in within a year. Brock took a lot longer. Roman Reigns took a lot longer, you know, but Shamrock, and they were putting him in with guys too, also that could walk him through some stuff.
So I do want to ask, as like a wrestler, did you guys ever have talks or discussions about UFC fights being fixed or works or anything like that, or did you guys all know it was a shoot? Or
I'm sure there was.
Yeah, I mean, they've had to have had fixed fights at some point. It's just a fact of the fight game where some fights get fixed, or you know. But did you ever?
I'm sure some fights aren't fixed right now.
Kid. Yeah, I'm sure with the judges, and it just happens. Knows? Yeah, but like,
who knows?
As the boys,
how come you don't know what the judges know? How come in a boxing match, do the judges' card come out after every round?
No,
in a boxing match,
they only display the cards when the fight's over. I agree.
Why isn't it every single round you should know what every judge feels?
I wish you knew that, because it would give the viewer, like, you'd be able to see the score of the fight. And you could also hold them accountable to their judgments in real time, too. Like, the fans in the arena would know.
It would be a lot better for the novice fan.
Yes.
To understand where the score is at.
I'm asking you guys all the time, like, did that guy win that round by 2 points? And you're like, heck, it's hard to win a round by 2 points.
Yeah, you don't see many 10-8s in MMA. They have to really get work.
And when I look at it, I see sometimes, absolutely, that's a 10-8 round.
Well, it's different in boxing. Like, boxing, if you get a knockdown, like, that's 100% a 10-8.
Right.
But, there's, but like, even in MMA, though, I feel the same way, that I see 10-8 rounds all the time.
Yeah,
you guys never
different.
Really
it's
see them.
No, it's just, it's different.
It's just judge different.
Yeah. It is judge a little, even though it's a 10-point must system, it is judge a little bit different from boxing, but... Yeah, UFC making it to 300 shows, certainly a huge accomplishment to them, and I thought it was a great show on Saturday. I love
it. And Jim Miller, actually, in UFC 100, 200, and 300. Shout out to him.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome. Going for our topic this week, we reviewed and watched Spring Stampede 1999.
So yeah.
We're on that spring tour that Hack had in WCW. This was a really interesting show. I remember loving this show, and I still really enjoyed the show a lot. They had a sold-out crowd, you guys, 17,000 fans in the Tacoma, Washington Dome. I thought it was a really hot crowd all night for the show, but before we get into the show, I do have a couple notes from some of the Wrestling Observers leading into the show. On the March 29th Wrestling Observer, the Spring Stampede card on 4/11 has a tentative plan of being Flair, Page, and Booker T versus Hogan, Nash, and Dusty Rhodes as the main event. Rhodes is being thrust into the spotlight because Scott Hall may be retiring from wrestling. It's basically at the insistence of his ex-wife, who he's trying to get back with and who has long felt the only way he can be well is to be away from the wrestling environment. Hack, I know you may not know this or remember this or anything, but was there any plans for Dusty Rhodes to be back as a wrestler? Did you ever hear about this six-man main event for this pay-per-view? Or
I knew Dusty a little bit, you know, because we spent some time in ECW, and I would always ask him questions and just get near him to absorb through osmosis, being near somebody like him and somebody like Terry Funk. Just sit down with him with two metal chairs and ask him questions.
Yeah,
and that was great. And there's no way to me that I feel in that time that Dusty had any inkling whatsoever to get back in the ring, unless it was a huge payday.
Yeah, I mean, that match is just like weird to me looking at it, like a six-man tag with Booker T and Paige and Flair on the one side and Hogan, Nash, and Dusty on the other. I mean, Dusty was affiliated with the NWO at the time, and I know he was involved in some of the booking, but
a lot.
That was just a weird match to see when I was reading over some of the observers before the show. I was like, that's a really weird match.
Sounded like a hot take.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Is that a Meltzer hot take?
No, I mean, I'm sure he heard it from somebody at the time. Is the observer Meltzer? Yes.
All right. I'm glad I got that right. Yeah, so I'm not getting hack checked on that.
Wasn't Wade Keller. So, yeah.
I could have easily have said Wade Keller.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know if you ever heard about that. So I wanted to ask because that was a weird match. In the April 5th Observer, Meltzer wrote, Kevin Sullivan passed out before the show and was literally asleep on the floor backstage and lost control of his bodily functions. The EMTs arrived at the building and Sullivan actually stopped breathing backstage on more than one occasion before he was revived. At one point in the early evening, there was fear he had a seizure or even a heart attack, but it turned out to not be as serious as that. Hack, do you have any memories of Kevin Sullivan passing out backstage at a show at this time?
Well, what show was it? Where was it compared to the pay-per-view that we just watched before?
It was 2 weeks before the show. He passed out at Nitro backstage.
Absolutely no recollection whatsoever.
Okay. Yeah, it was apparently a big deal at the time. He passed out from I don't know what. Had a seizure backstage and was luckily enough to be fine. But I didn't know if you had any memories of that or anything. No. Okay. Moving on to the show proper. This one started off with Blitzkrieg and Juventud Guerrera. I love this match. I loved it at the time watching it. I thought these two guys crushed it for an opener. One of my favorite things about the show is all the different styles of wrestling that you got to see on the show. We'll get to your match in a minute here, but starting off with two high flyer guys just crushing it like this. Blitzkrieg was a SoCal indie guy who burst onto the scenes in 1999, and then he just kind of faded away from the business soon after. He got in and out of the business real quick. He was super, super talented, but I thought these two had just about the best possible opener. Everything was super crisp besides like one botch, I think, on the top rope. But yeah, I love this match. I don't know what you guys, what did you think of it, Hack?
Great match.
Yeah.
Unbelievably great match.
Yeah.
You got two, I don't even know much about Blitzkrieg, but I know Hoovy.
Yeah.
And Hoovy was on back then.
He was
on.
I mean, it was like probably the prime of his career, God, I would say, that like 98-99 time span for him. And these two guys certainly just crushed it and delivered. I love this match. I thought, everything, like I said, was super crisp. Hoovy crushed him with a suicide dive that a lot of times when you see dives today, they look like they're just like a trust fall dive. But Hoovy really hit him like a missile on that dive.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, especially when guys are flipping in the WWE right now. It's who knows. And I think a lot of the guys that are there for the catching are for who, for what. Am I going to get hurt to do this, to lose my spot? I don't care if he bumps. Maybe he's going to get hurt and I take his spot.
Wow.
Because that might have been Monday Night Raw last week. The pay-per-view. There was a lot in the Andrade match and Ray and his son. There was a lot of missed catches in that match, like four or five of them.
Okay, so walk the audience a little bit. When you're working with a guy that's doing a dive,
yeah,
as you're the person that's responsible for catching them, what are you looking for when the guy does
I'm trying
dive?
To get my shift. If they're doing a flip, I'm trying to get his ass to land on my and left shoulder.
Okay.
So, and then we come down together. That gives him a breaking point, and I want him to stand on his feet. Even if I'm having Hoovy do that, I'm like, boom, hit me in the shoulder, kid, and land on your feet. I'll spin up, turn around, hit me with something else. But if they're coming forward on you, then you want to kind of like take it like a cross body.
Okay.
So you can help them a lot. But there's so many people aren't doing the proper catching, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just something that you see sometimes with the dives. And I really loved some of the dives in this match. Like I said, Hoovy just like... You could tell he was trying to hurt him with a dive instead of some of these like trust fall dives that you see out there.
Yeah, I think the best thing about the match was you got all the high spots that you see in today's match, but nothing was rushed.
Yeah.
They let everything breathe, and it was all just feeling the crowd, Hoovy working the crowd, working the crowd.
That's a great point, because I've seen that same match down in Mexico, and there's probably 25% more spots. Hoovy knew you can't do that. Let's slow it down for this audience.
Yeah, and I absolutely love the finish, seeing the super Hoovy driver off the top. That was like, oh my god.
Dude, he killed him with that.
He did kill him with that.
I was like, man, like right on top of the head, too.
Yeah,
like,
that was a fantastic finish. I had the match at like 4.5 stars. I know I kind of marked out there on my star rating, but I thought...
work rate, I'd put it right there also.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
People don't know them, but my work rate, are you kidding me? Yeah, easy for it.
The crowd was with him, too. So, I mean, for an opener of a pay-per-view, you guys definitely want to check this one out. It's on the network and on Peacock. You guys absolutely have to watch this
match. It left me wondering who the Blitzkrieg dude was, because I was like, man, that guy... Because I was meant to ask you, like, where did he become somebody else or whatever? Because I'm like, dude, who is this guy?
Blitzkrieg is a real wrestling, like, what if? Because he came in, he's a Southern California indie guy. He was working a lot of independent shows at the time. He came up with Super Dragon, obviously of pro wrestling guerrilla fame, and just kind of, you know, landed in WCW. They signed him. His work there was tremendous, and he just kind of... got out of the business.
That's strange.
Is there another Blitzkrieg that was a bald guy or something that I'm trying to think of? But don't ring a bell to anybody?
No, it doesn't ring a bell to me. Yeah. So maybe if any listeners out there know of another Blitzkrieg in wrestling, definitely let us know. But obviously, you know, in 1999...
No, if you three don't know, I'm wrong again. No, as usual.
I've never heard of another Blitzkrieg, but yeah.
The other Blitzkrieg I know is Blitzkrieg Pop.
Yeah, I never knew of anyone else, but, you know, obviously, had he stuck in the business, I think, you know, Blitzkrieg would have had a ton of other great matches, and the 1999 run that he had in WCW is certainly a lot of memorable work.
And the only other thing I noticed, like, the very first match was, like, the 100 security members down the runway on each side of the thing, and... literally did nothing all night as I continued to watch. It was like the weird... I don't remember if they did that for like every pay-per-view, but there was like 20 security guards on like each side of the runway.
It was excessive. It was you know, they... I don't know who would win in a match between them and Atlas Security, but I'll take Atlas Security.
Yeah, it was just like it was just like super strange to me that they had like all the security down the runway for I don't know whatever reason, but maybe for Papa Pump during his match.
We'll get there. Next up on the show, this was the Hack and Bam Bam Bigelow match. What a match this was. So leading up before this match, on the Nitro before Chastity and Hack, you guys came out and cost Bammer the match against Buff Bagwell. And you guys have been feuding leading up to this. You guys obviously had the match that we went over on episode 2 at Uncensored with Raven, the three-way. So you come out with Chastity. You were holding a table covered in barbed wire. And then Bam Bam comes out with a cart full of plunder. And the match starts right in the aisle. Hack, what did you think of your performance in this match and just everything about it? Because I was blown away. I thought it was, you know, really, really awesome work. And one of my, like I said earlier, one of my favorite things about this card is all the different styles of wrestling. So you come out following that high-flying opener, and then you give them something completely different with the plunder match. What did you think about your work rewatching this match?
Quick thing I want to say first about the fire extinguisher. In the Buff Bagwell match right there, that was the only time I ever screwed up with a fire extinguisher, because they started making these new ones. so that I wasn't used to. They used to have CO2 fire extinguishers, but the one I used that night was a chemical one, and then the chemical one sucks the air out of the arena. And you see Buff's going up to do his finish. He gets down and starts choking on the side. Big Bigelow's sitting in the corner choking like that. I'm like 20 yards down the aisle. I'm like,
so those, they were not worked coughs. They were legitimately.
Dude, it was my mistake because I didn't know that there was such things as murder, these.
Really?
And I had used them so many times before. Before that, I had used the fire extinguisher in like 30 matches.
Okay, so let me ask you this too, a little behind the scenes stuff here. When you're doing like a plunder match like this, are you guys just literally like picking up things backstage? Is somebody like a handler or a producer like putting things in a cart for you?
It's us.
Are you I saw a fire extinguisher in that hallway? Cart
together.
Okay.
Me and Bigelow went out. I put the table underneath and I slid the table, grabbed the hay, put it on top so nobody could see it. I was climbing up the stagecoach when a dude starts yelling at me, "Get the freak down from there."
Okay.
So, and I'm like, what's the problem?
So let's talk about this. So if you watch the match, guys, Hack pulls out a table underneath the stagecoach and he sets it up. You set it up pretty far away.
I had the exact... That wasn't just by happenstance.
Okay.
I knew where that post was, the wood post. I knew exactly where I wanted to put it. I turned my head back once, moved it about 3-4 inches.
Okay. And you set the table up, you put Bam Bam on it, and you climb up the stagecoach. So I know we mentioned this last week. Talk about the stagecoach and how much this thing was worth.
I don't know. It was what the guy starts yelling at me. I'm like, dude, what's the problem? If you got a problem, go ask Eric Bischoff. And the guy's like, this thing's worth like $10 million. And he literally pulled it out of a museum.
And this is before the show, you're saying, right?
Yeah, before the show. They pulled that thing out of a museum to be there. And that's just retarded to me to spend that money. You know what I mean? You could have spent like 20 grand on a brand new one, or even if there is new ones now, whatever.
Yeah.
So you knew it was wobbly a little bit when you were going on it you got up there? Because I saw the wobble a little bit, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if he knew it was.
No, that was me. That was me almost tripping off of it on my face.
Well, and that thing was probably made for people back when nobody was over 200 pounds. You're getting on there. You're probably like 260.
But either way, I was up there before in that exact same position. Once the guy went, Bischoff said, yeah, let him do whatever he wants. Then I got up there, and that's where I knew to measure it. I marked the spot. I didn't actually put a mark on the floor because there was a wooden post there that gave me a great idea of exactly where I wanted it to be.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what's a stagecoach debt?
But there was a lot into that. Just that one spot. We're talking about a half hour.
Yeah.
You know?
I love when you pull the table out and there's just hay covering it. Like, I knew my cat. Like, that was actually just, like, hilarious. And I remember you telling me a story about, like, when you first got to the building, how when you saw, like, you didn't obviously know there was going to be, like, a wagon there or whatever. You said when you first got to the building, you saw that and said, I'm jumping off that thing.
And that's how my brain works.
You see something,
like New Jack walking into a building and saying, I'm jumping over there tonight. You just see it.
Yeah.
And now get back to your point about, well, is there producers back there doing this? Me and Bammer are orchestrating everything.
Okay.
We got, Kevin gave us full control of the match, did not give us a time limit, did not give us a winner. A winner or loser.
He didn't even give you a winner or loser for that match?
You guys go out there and do what you do.
So that's how the book, you guys didn't even like.
We're special people to Kevin Sullivan, though. You know what I mean? He knows what's supposed to go on, and he knows I can't win that match. So he's going to leave it in our hands, knowing full well that I know I can't win that match.
Wow. I'm amazed that they didn't have.
I'm more the baby face than Bammer in that match.
Yeah? No, you.
You know what I'm saying? So Kevin's a. All right, I've said this story before. Kevin Sullivan was leaving. This might have been 6 months, 8 months before to go to WCW. And he says, listen, Nancy's going to start coming out with you. Kid, promoters will love you. You can lose every night of the week and get over more than the guy that just beat you, whether he's the champion or not. You know, so I forget where I was going there, but
Kevin never mind doing
knew
jobs. That
I knew. And the only time I ever won a match ever in ECW was when I had to win the belt.
Yeah.
I never won ever.
And you didn't mind.
Unless I had the belt or I had to win it. That was my thing.
Yeah. Oh, no, it makes sense. And obviously, look, you're a testament to just character getting you over more than wins anyway. So, yeah.
It wasn't about winning or losing. It's how much you beat the other guy up.
Yeah.
You're in a bar fight right now. I'm not going to go pin you in a bar fight.
No, yeah. I mean, so you hit this, like, really awesome, perfect, like, senton off the carriage through the table on Bam Bam. The table breaks into, like, a million pieces, and then Bam Bam just picks it up and starts...
I know, he gets... I said that. He goes, you just put Bam Bam through this table, he gets up and whacks you
with a piece. He just hits you with a piece of the table, and I'm like, this is awesome. I'm loving this match. You guys went back to the ring from there. You took a great head-over-toes bump into the plunder cart, too.
Like before I got into the ring.
Before you got into
that
the ring.
That standard hack.
That's standard. That's a standard Sandman bump. And I was
did like, the same thing near the end into the ladder when you had the ladder on one side and the guardrail.
Yeah. I want to ask you, too, because this was something Tony was saying, Shivani was saying on the commentary. He was burying some of the trash can shots, saying that they have some give to it and it makes a great sound. Like, did you think that
and
was
then
weird?
The next hit. Bobby the Brain goes, oh, Tony, you didn't think that hurt?
Yeah.
Bobby the Brain was great. That dude is so funny.
Yeah.
He had 10, like, super pops for me.
Yeah.
Just by different things that he said during the show.
So you did also have a great sell of that cookie sheet shot, which is what Bobby was talking about there. I loved your sell of that. I have to ask, too, about the suplex. So it looks like Bam Bam's going for a suplex on you, and then it looks like you were reversing it. Was that a botch on the suplex or a cover for the botch with the
knee? I don't remember, but I know that it was a screw-up.
Okay. Whatever,
I just remember that it was a screw-up, but it didn't look bad because I sold my knee,
right,
and he sold his gut,
yeah.
So we got around it. But that there was something else supposed to happen, but I don't remember.
Well, and then you immediately go and grab a ladder, so all's forgiven anyway. So you know what I'm saying? It's like...
No, and a great bump off the ladder through the table.
Oh, dude, that bump you took off the ladder to go through the table that was propped up on the
and
outside.
The table's hanging by an inch on the apron and an inch on the guardrail. I'm like, Chastity, I'm begging you to pull the guardrail a little bit.
That table also broke into a million pieces. Like, I love when tables just, like, explode. That was a really awesome table bump.
Yeah, that was my... If you think about it, what was I doing with Bamber in that position going up there?
It was actually hilarious because Bammer's like hanging on the ropes and you just climb the ladder for like no apparent reason and then he's just like, right,
do this, Bammer.
Yeah, I don't know what you were going for there, but hey, it worked. It made a great bump and you guys get back in the ring.
Yeah, and the one thing, I can't believe nobody's noticed that the tables were 6 foot. Not one table was 8 foot.
Oh, so they were smaller.
All the wrong size tables.
Wow, okay.
I didn't mind because if I'm sticking Bammer on a table, I'd rather stick him on a 6 foot
than make him look bigger.
And well, and also he's not going to bust through it just being fat and heavy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about the other guys who did this. Oh, Perry, remind me to bring that up during the Perry Saturn
yes.
match.
Okay.
Coming off the top rope.
So you end up crotching yourself on the railing going
great
for
spot.
A leg
great
drop.
Great sell by me, actually.
I love that, and I always love your leg drops. Anytime you get up on the top rope, I'm like, what's going to happen here? I don't know, but it's going to be entertaining, and you crotch yourself there. So the fire extinguisher then it comes into play. It didn't
Chastity
work.
Chastity was a hair late.
It didn't work for
a month
for Chastity.
And a half late.
Bam Bam then used it on her, but he ate a cane shot and a white Russian leg sweep for you to take over. And then you kind of go up, you prop him on the table, you're going for something in the corner, and then he gets
Same
you.
Same thing as the other spot where I'm just sending up for him to do it.
He hits you with a greetings from Asbury Park through the table. That table also exploded into a million pieces.
Because he landed on all of it.
He protected
took
you.
Care of me. All right, here's
it
the
looked
thing.
Great. It looked like you landed yeah. right on your head, too.
And the fire extinguisher. But I landed and then bumped off my landing onto the fire extinguisher. But I want people to understand that you can't have a match like that. I can't have that match with Brian Knobbs. Brian Knobbs would literally kill me in that match. I mean, honestly, I'd probably die 3-4 days later from like a liver laceration or something like that. You can't have that match without utter confidence in the other person that you're working with that he's not going to hurt you.
Yeah.
When I'm up there on the top rope, I have no worries in the world that I'm going to be hurt.
Even though Bam Bam's a nearly 400-pound man.
I have zero worries because I've had, you got to understand, I worked 10 straight weeks with them opening up their show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When they started all our stuff and the times that I worked with them in ECW.
Right.
You can't have that match with anybody.
Yeah.
You have to have that absolute and utter trust when you're hitting people with objects and everything. You just got to be like, hey, bring it, dude. I know you're not going to hurt me.
Yeah, no, I thought it was an amazing finish.
I mean, that dude, for being, he would never hurt me.
Yeah.
Ever. The biggest guy, well, him and the Big Show never hurt me either, but the two biggest guys I ever worked with, Bammer would barely even touch you. Because when he was brought into the business, now you got to remember, when he was doing his stuff with Lawrence Taylor and all the other guys on the show, none of them touched each other in any match ever back in those days.
Yeah.
You know?
Nah, Bam Bam.
So was, that's how he learned.
Bam was touching
you and making it look great.
Yeah. Absolute legend. His work was always tremendous. I thought your work in this match was great. You guys
went- by the way, no, I am. This might be my best hardcore. If you're going to send up a rocket right now to go past Andromeda, which is the next galaxy, if people don't know, to the next galaxy, and you're going to put a gold tape on there of professional, like, it's all things about our language, our culture, and everything. If there's one little bit about hardcore wrestling on there that they're sending out to the universe, that would be my match.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know I'm a bit biased here, guys, but I gave this match 4 stars. I thought it was absolutely tremendous. I loved it. I thought it was a great plunder match. You guys only went 11 minutes. None of the time was wasted. It was all action. This definitely is a really, really good match. You guys got to check this one out.
You could tell because Hack was breathing heavy as hell at the end of it, and he was blown up.
I'm like, we got to go home, man.
That was a quick 11 minutes. Yeah, there was a lot done in that 11 minutes. Yeah.
Hey, and hold on. Let me look at my notes. I haven't even looked at my notes yet.
Take a look here, man. If you got anything else here,
and one. No, the only thing was that did anybody count how many finishes there were in the match?
No, you guys didn't do a lot of near falls.
I don't. It was one cover. Yeah,
one,
and that was very important to both of us. To have just one finish, because I didn't want to bring the ref in, like, where you're doing everything in the world, killing everybody, and the ref coming in falls, you know what I mean? Because that's how everybody else would do it.
Right.
We're doing it straight through one count.
Wow, I love it. I did not notice that, but that's...
Because nobody ever does that stuff.
Yeah.
Also, one question about the match. Coming out with the table, has anybody ever came to the ring?
No, that's the reason why I did it.
No, but which I hated them coming out with the table after you did it.
Two of them carried it, the pussies.
I think
one was wearing a skirt anyway, so what do you expect?
I think the Dudleys would carry a table out every once in a while. Probably Public Enemy as well. I'm pretty sure they did when they came out.
I'm the first, as I remember.
I don't know if I had ever seen it before, because I totally forgot about it.
One guy carry it out like that.
You carried it
that
out like a
champ. That goes back to my concrete days. There used to be panels that weighed 100 pounds that were 36 inches by 8 inches, and I used to carry them on the side just like that.
Okay.
So my idea was, give me that. It wasn't even planned. It was backstage, and I'm like, here, give me this. I'm taking it out with me.
Yeah. It was an awesome match. You guys have to watch this match. If you're listening to this podcast and you've never seen this match before, what are you doing? Pause the show. Check this match out. It's really awesome, and I loved it. Next up on the show was Mikey Whipwreck and Scotty Riggs. Scotty Riggs was doing like a Rick Martel modelish gimmick here in 99.
Well, and a half-ass Rick Rude, too.
Half-ass Rick Rude. He was doing some of the gyrations and stuff.
Yeah, the hip thrust.
Yeah, some of the hip thrust.
Oh, and Lex Luger coming out with the mirror.
Yeah.
Well, he's got all three of them.
Yeah, he's the narcissist, model.
I didn't even think about that.
It's kind of just like a ripoff of those three gimmicks. Look, man, this match really wasn't it. I didn't find it that compelling. Mikey did bump his ass off here, as always.
Yeah, the bump off the apron of the guardrail was a nice bump.
Ooh, yeah, wow.
Wow, what a bump that is. But overall, man, nothing match here. It felt like a WCW Saturday Night or a Thunder match on a pay-per-view.
Okay, the match was there because of DDP and Scotty Riggs.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, look, I know that Riggs. Why. Riggs been definitely doing a lot.
DDP's the reason I had a job in that company, and there's another 10, 15 dudes that can say that. But that's the reason why Scotty Riggs was there at that position.
I mean, like, you know, trying to push him again at this point after, you know, American Males and after the whole Flock thing, it was certainly a repackaging of him. He never really went anywhere with this character. Obviously, I'm really happy for Scotty Riggs in life. He seemed to have turned around his life recently.
Good for him. He looked great last time I saw him.
Yeah, he looks great. I know he's doing well, and definitely shouts out to him for that and everything. But as a match, not really that good. And a forearm shot was the finish.
All right. I don't even have to look at my notes. That match was a 1985 indie main event. It really was.
Yeah, it was very simple.
Yeah, I mean, very simple. Take your time, work a hold, you know? That's what it was.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wouldn't say it was a bad match.
No,
I mean,
it wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad, but it was just there, you know? Yes. And then the crowd was chanting boring at some points in it. And look, after following those first two matches, they had a tough act to follow. But this match just, I don't know. Ty, what did you think of it? Anything?
The only thing I really got from it was that it was Mikey's third match in WCW after apparently never getting used again after the Kidman match.
That's a hack check there for sure.
That's basically what I got out of it.
I don't know if you guys have any other things on that match because it was just...
No, I'm good.
Next up on the show was Conan and Disco Inferno. So Conan was like really, really over in 1999. He always stood out to me as someone WCW missed the boat on, along with like Ray, Benoit, Eddie, Jericho, and Raven, in terms of elevating younger, you know, talent up the card, especially after being kicked out of the version of the NWO. I don't know about you guys, but this match didn't really do a whole lot for me either. Obviously, Conan was very over with his face work, but I don't know. The match was just kind of there, and I don't really have a whole lot to say about it. I don't know. Oliver, what did you think of it?
I don't know. Disco Inferno is kind of just like, just doesn't do it for me in any kind of way. Like, it didn't really seem like the crowd was into it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're into Conan, and he's obviously over with the entrance, and, you know, you get the pop and everything like that. But once the match started, it's kind of just like, what are we doing out here? Where's the match going? What's the story? And
yeah,
it was just two guys out there working.
Yeah, it really wasn't much to me, and Disco's offense was very limited in between the Disco taunts.
And it's just such a strange character. Like, how are you supposed to get behind this dude who's supposed to be some dancing disco guy, and then he's wrestling in the ring? Like, I don't know. It's just weird.
I mean, I guess as a heel character, you know, a Disco, people didn't like it. But now we're in 1999.
Yeah,
we're
like, it just seems like a wonky WWE, like, 70s character.
Yeah, it's very dated at that point, even in 1999. Like, disco music was already out for a long time, and I don't know. I mean, Ty, what did you think of this match?
Disco actually popped me a few times, just throwing up whatever, like his hand up in the air, doing his disco like gun shoots, like every once in a while, doing whatever. I was actually found pretty funny, but other than that, I mean, the heat just took way too long. Disco's on him, like holding his head, like way too much, and I thought every spot there was like 100 rope shoots in that match. Like, it was like, all right, shooting to the ropes, boom, pick him up, shoot him in the ropes, boom, pick him up, shoot him in the ropes. I don't know. It was strange. It was weird. It was a little long and drawn out.
Well, that's kind of way matches go, especially when Conan's looking at it, and even maybe Disco, because I know them both really well. I understand what they both saw that they could do in the match, but it doesn't translate to the audience. which you'll see later about the Filthy Animals, which we'll talk about, which that Conan tries to go to after that. But I was Oliver was totally right. The character just doesn't get it. Got it with the kids in the audience.
Yeah,
and there was more kids in the audience than you thought, because I actually stopped and got up out of my bed and I looked, and the kids were popping. The adults are like sitting there like,
I thought the finish was solid. It wasn't tight enough. If it was a little bit more tight, I thought it would have been better.
I thought it was weird that Conan stole the finisher of Disco, because Disco was using the stunner, the chart buster at the time, for his finisher, and then Conan uses it on him for the finish. I don't know. This match was just there for me.
Well, maybe that was the... See, I could see Conan thinking, okay, that's a storyline we could look at later if they're going to give him a chance on a mic. I beat you with your own finisher, Disco.
Well, yeah, if you saw in the... Like, they did like a little pre-match like thing, how Disco made like a rap song making fun of Conan or something. Yeah. So I guess that was like Disco stealing the rap song, Conan stealing the finisher, whatever that means.
But. Man, I don't know. This one's pretty forgettable and... Yeah, I don't know. Next up on the show was Rey Mysterio Jr. facing off against Billy Kidman. This was a cruiserweight title match, but they had recently won the tag titles from Benoit Malenko, so this is a pair of tag partners going at it. I thought this match was really, really solid, but probably not the best that I had seen from them. Rey hit his head on the steps doing a head scissors on the outside.
Yeah, almost knocked himself out.
Yeah, I think that definitely played into this match kind of not going into the next gear like you thought it would. Certainly, these guys are both amazing wrestlers, but I don't know. Hack, do you think that bump took a, like, did it ring Ray's bell there, or do you think it did? Or
I didn't think so.
Okay, yeah,
I mean it might affect you for a little while, but either way, Billy will keep you in the match anyway.
Right.
Even if Ray's a little bit off, Billy will check that out right away, and then he'll start. So if you're going to do a spot, a lot of times with guys like that that know each other real good, you just have to say the opening part of the spot, and then you both know the next 4, 5, 6 things, maybe 7, 8, 9 things that come.
Okay.
But if you got a guy that's a little bit knocked out, you got to feed him 1, 2 at a time. You know what I'm saying? But I didn't feel that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I the crowd really wasn't feeling them for some reason, despite them having a good match. And I don't know, because they were really into the high-flying wrestling earlier with the Blitzkrieg and Hoovy match. But for some reason, they just weren't that into this match, and the crowd was kind of cold for it. I don't know why.
Yeah, that was on my notes. Was the one thing that really took away from the match for me was the crowd and the lack of reaction behind it. I don't know if that's because they were partners going against each other.
Yeah.
Or do we know why that is?
Well, I think
it was a cruiserweight title like tournament that they were doing, and I guess they just happened to meet in the tournament or something like that.
I don't know if that's. I'm pretty sure.
Well, because the winner was facing Hoovy the next night for the cruiserweight.
So it was just for the cruiserweight title. Mysterio was the champion going into it.
Okay, because they said Hoovy was gonna. Whoever won the Hoovy Blitzkrieg match was a.
The number one contender.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's what it was. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, they went 15 minutes. They did do some cool stuff, but I don't know. I mean, maybe if it didn't follow the previous two matches, it would have had a more lively crowd. I don't know if the previous two matches killed the crowd. Rey hit a top rope bulldog that was really awesome in this match. And then after hitting a bunch of cool stuff, the crowd finally did come alive for the finish. And Rey finished it with a top rope hunikanrana. Something was off, but I wouldn't say it was bad or anything. I would put this at like 3.5 stars and maybe 3, or it was in that range.
I think it was a lot of like the same moves, repetitive moves, like hunikanrana, the jump off hunikanrana. Like you were doing similar moves. Yeah, maybe you were doing off the top rope, or you were doing like a springboard or like whatever. For me, it was kind of just like, you know, spot. I wish they kind of told the partner story more in the match. Like, there was more maybe angle to that.
Yeah.
Like that storytelling part of the match than maybe just, like, spot. That probably could have done it. But overall, it just reminds you how much of, like Kidman's good, but, like, how Rey was, like, ahead of the times of, like, just watching him do everything and the way he
just
moves.
His movement in the ring. Like I love Ray's gimmick from then too. Like I know he doesn't do it now and obviously he has the mask, but just like the way they presented him, like coming out there, like the hip-hop music, shirt off, no mask, like
No, I mean,
he was like, looking good for a small guy.
He was looking good for a small guy. There is a reason they took the mask off. Obviously, we went over that last on the show about Uncensored. I think it was a big booking mistake for them. But Ray was super over, but it just this match, for whatever reason, just didn't have the crowd. And decent work, but not their best that I've ever seen from the two of them.
Biggest thing I got out of it, the ref was counting so fast, it was straight lightning. I can't believe I don't know the dude's name, because I usually get all of
most this Mickey of the J? Refs. Was it Mickey J?
No.
He did your match, I think.
No, and it wasn't Charles.
It was the mullet guy.
With the mustache.
We'll get that.
He was counting so fast. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Next up on the show here was Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko taking on Raven and Perry Saturn.
Oh, wait, hold on. Oh. I got to say this note about Ray.
Okay.
That match, those guys really had a chance to steal the show. You know what I mean? Well,
yeah.
Hoovy's match could have stole the show, too, if it was like third to last or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But they had the chance to steal the show right there. And, yes, it didn't come off to me like that. But I knew Ray then, and Ray was not a happy camper right now in that company.
He was very disgruntled at this point in time.
He was not a happy camper, so I'm thinking maybe now that might have something to do with it.
So was that related to the feud with Nash and the mask?
Yeah, and ripping off the mask, and Nash just didn't give a damn.
Yeah.
He didn't give a damn about your family's legacy at all.
I'm going to get into a little bit of that politics stuff here in this match, the tag team match between Benoit, Malenko, and Raven and Saturn. Here you have four guys that have kind of carved out a little bit of a name and some notoriety in the company. Heck, what's it like backstage morale at this point when these guys just know that there's no upper mobility? No matter how over you get, no matter what storyline happens, you're at this level. So I've heard Raven talk about
nobody this. Nobody cares because you're making more money than you have ever made before, so you make a deal with the devil.
Yeah, I guess, but
it's exactly what it is.
Yeah, so I
make a deal with the devil.
I had previously heard Raven talk about this. He kind of referred to it as like the Big 12 or the Big 10. There was 10 or so guys, 12 or so guys in the company that they cared about, and the rest of the company they just didn't. And you couldn't crack that Big 10, Big 12. Did you feel that same way in WCW? Like there was
no. You go anywhere, you know. Wait, you're not cracking it.
Yeah, you know.
I went the three different times going to Vince and ECW situations, there is no recollection in my mind of ever thinking that it was going to be anything like great. And there was a ceiling, and that's the way it was.
Are you talking about like in 2008, like when you guys came back?
Yeah. Even that. People were like, balls is like, oh, I'm so disappointed. I'm like, are you an idiot, dude? What did you think they were going to do with us?
Well, all right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe you have a different mentality of where, like, you know where your ceiling is, right? But
you also never cared about losing either when some guys actually care about going over. So you probably do have a different aspect
of it. When I'm there, I'm like, you know, I'm in my own head. I'm on my own. I'd never dressed in the locker room ever once. I would be under a stairwell somewhere. You know, like, I remember us in Trenton, the time I signed those 1,400 cards, and like, I hated the dressing room.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I hated Sabu, hated it. Van Damme didn't have a problem, but he was on a different level than us.
Yeah.
Tommy didn't have a problem because Tommy was Tommy. And I could not dress in the locker room. I would always find a little spot somewhere way off in the corner.
Okay. So getting back to the match here, the crowd was really into Raven as a face. I don't know if that was like being
those
in Seattle.
Those guys were over huge as babies in that match. I was shocked because I don't remember it that way. And I don't remember why the other two were such heels.
So do you think part of that was being in Seattle area where grunge music was from, that they were behind
Raven?
Gotta
keep them separated.
Do you think maybe that was part of it? I mean, I don't know. They were super over.
I can't see that now.
Yeah. Okay.
What was Benoit?
They were the four horsemen, they were getting like really big. All right,
that makes sense then.
Yeah.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, they were doing heel work. This match, I thought this match was awesome. It really spoke to the depth that they had in this company and what they squandered. You had really awesome work from all four in this match and some really cool spots throughout. I just feel like all these guys could have been pushed higher than what they were. I thought you had some really cool tag moments. Hack, you got some notes here on this match. What stood out for you?
The biggest note of all is how pissed. I remember talking to Scotty in the locker room. He's like, well, because I know he's got to work. You know what I mean? He can't. He doesn't have all his minions and everything. So I'm like needling him just like he would needle me, you know? I'm like, you got to go out there and work with Benoit and Malenko tonight. And he's just like, hey, he did a great job.
Yeah, he did.
He hung right with those dudes.
He did, and I thought Perry did a great job in this match as well.
What the hell was Perry wearing?
So he's rocking a dress.
The greatest spot of the match was when he was on the top rope, put his skirt over what's his name's head, and did that punch.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was my spot of the match.
That was cool. I really enjoyed.
His table bump was horrible.
Yeah, totally. What was
because
that?
They didn't break it.
Yeah.
Here we go. This is why you have to have your shit together before you go out there. You cannot go out there and grab a table that you put a 225-pound guy on. You jump from, let's say, 11 feet in the air, maybe get to an elevation of 2-3 feet higher than that, land your full weight on him, and the table doesn't break. That's their fault.
I'm pretty sure. I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure the table broke. I think you might be talking about
the. No, I'm talking about Perry off the top rope.
Yeah, I think that was like a pre. That was. They did the same spot like the week before, and he thudded it when he had like the jeans and the boosty.
Yes. Yes. You're right, Todd.
The boosty.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but why would you give it a table that made you.
But that wasn't in that match. That was on a replay they were showing from the week before.
That's a screw up to me.
Yeah, I did. I always get a pop out of seeing the drop toe hold on the chair. I love that Raven spot.
Oh, the whole building knew it too.
You do.
As soon as he put it down, they just all were right there with him.
I mean, it's one of his like five moves. You know, it's coming in a match. And
I know it's weird watching Raven as a baby face.
Yeah, it is. It is weird. But Benoit took a headbutt off the top rope into the chair. That was an insane finish. I thought the match was great, but I mean, some of this Benoit stuff, when you watch it over, I don't know, Hack, how it is for you when you watch the performances, trying to, you know, take into account everything that happened and transpired. Obviously, when you see a guy take a bump like that,
when I'm watching his performance, it has not, whatever happened in the world,
right,
with him, has no effect on the way I look at him because I knew him before that.
Okay.
Now, if I never knew him and I was watching the spots, maybe then I would have
a preconceived notion?
Something like that. I knew the guy, and he was a great guy.
Yeah, no, and that's what most wrestlers say. Like
Ty used to hang out with his son. His son, Tice. Do you remember hanging out with him at the pay-per-view?
Yeah, we're around the same age.
Yeah, and I know how close you were to Nancy as well. So it's just just awful. But, you know, the performance there, the match was great. But
best match on the card, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was the best match on the show, too. I put it at 4.5.
I know, but the placement has a lot to do with it to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It does, but I thought the timing, the work, everything it did, like, was super crisp. Was impeccable. Yeah, it was super crisp.
You got those four guys in there, your timing should be impeccable.
Everything made sense. Like, it all flowed super well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good point, Ty.
Next up on the show, this was the finals of a U.S. title tournament. This was Scott Steiner versus Booker T. Big Papa Pump is absolutely unhinged at this point. He's doing that Memphis stalling heel work, crowd work, and just, wow.
Unhinged? He looks like a Greek god.
Yeah, I mean, like, no, but I'm saying he looks crazy, unhinged crazy. Like, he's yelling at the fans and
don't even bring that up. The one time, the second time he took a powder when he got into the ring, he jumped the guardrail, went to a fan. The fan's like, you're a pussy. I don't care about you.
So I got to ask
you.
He had a lot of run-ins with the law, run-ins backstage at this point. You're in the company at this point. Was Scott somebody that you were like apprehensive about approaching, or did you ever have any like stories about him backstage or anything like that? Or?
It was crazy that they were so separated from everybody else.
Okay.
all those guys.
So you're saying top guys were not
there? You have to understand, because you're in big buildings all the time. There's locker rooms here. There's the huge locker room for whatever team is there, and they're an away locker room, you know what I mean? But there's always other kind of caverns that those guys would just be cordoned off to, and you didn't see them a lot.
Okay, so you didn't even really have much interaction.
Catering there wasn't like catering was at WWE, where everybody would meet. Okay. Not that way.
Yeah, I thought he was doing a lot of like stalling work in the match. I thought this was an okay match, kind of plodding at points. A lot of heel work by Big Papa Pump. I don't know, what did you think of the match, Oliver?
It was a good match. I mean, you got Steiner working old school heel, just taking the powder, messing with the fans. I always forget how agile Booker T was for how big of a dude he is.
He was great. I mean, like, he could do top rope stuff. He could do all kinds of things.
Like, yeah, he looked awesome, too, in the match. He looked huge. I mean, he looked like he was like 6'6". I know he's not that big, but...
Well, when I saw him a couple weeks ago at the arena, we were the same height.
Wow, a little lifter guy, same, maybe.
Yeah, everybody was wearing them then. Ooh. Everybody.
Okay.
Remember I told you about Test?
Yeah.
Test was like 2 inches taller than me when he was going out to the ring.
Yeah, no, you're air airing all over. Those lifter guys out, as always.
So. Yeah, I thought it was pretty solid. Actually, Scott worked better than I remember him working at that point in his career.
Right.
Like, that was... He actually did a lot better in that match than I remember him. You know, like, later he seemed like he wasn't as good and, like, robotic from, like, his previous years, but he actually worked pretty well in that match with Booker, and I mean, might halfway be Booker, halfway be whatever, because they're both so good, but it was solid. It was average. It was about what I expected.
Yeah, I mean, Scott...
You have to understand that Booker is a very credible opponent. You're going to see Scott Steiner work against, like, a Brad Armstrong that they would bring in, like, once every 3 weeks or something like that. Booker's credible, so Steiner knows he's got to up his game. He also knows that it's a title situation going on. And to me, Steiner knows that Booker's on his way up. Steiner, he's thinking he's not getting much bigger than he is, but everybody in the industry knows Booker's on his way up, just like they knew that The Rock was on his way up, just like they knew that Roman Reigns was on their way up. But Booker was held down by all those guys that were above him.
I mean,
he should have had that title before DDP, I thought.
Yeah, we'll get to that later, but you know, both of these guys, both Steiner and Booker T, fit the build of guys in that mid-card range, trying to poke out into that upper mid-card, break that
Steiner
glass ceiling.
Mid-card range?
Well, no, I mean, at the time, this was his first singles title, I believe, at the time. I mean, yeah, he had the TV belt. But
he wasn't into chainmail and everything. He wasn't Big Papa.
They pushed him to the top of the card in 2000, but he wasn't quite there in 99 yet. He was starting to with the Big Papa Pump character. And these are guys that probably could have been headlining the show, and instead they're third from top. But, yeah, I thought it was
Look,
okay.
It was a top, though.
Yeah, I know.
The top's pretty big here.
We'll get to that. Next up on the show here was Goldberg against Kevin Nash. So, some backstory for this match. You had a very 1999 video package before this, trying to make sense of the last few months of the WCW booking. Nash, Scott Hall, Bam Bam Bigelow, Disco Inferno, a taser gun, the National Guard Armory, and the worst booking decision ever ended Goldberg's undefeated streak at 173-0. That was at Starrcade
in
December. Yeah, that was a work.
The streak was bull.
That was a work.
And there
number.
Was a problem there with Nash.
Well, I mean, look.
We'll get to it.
Look, despite everything going against him booking-wise, Goldberg was really still super over here. I thought the crowd came alive for this match, and it really had a big fight feel to it.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah, I thought it did.
Wow, yeah, it did.
Like the fans were like, these are stars going at it, and we know that they have the history. Whether or not the booking was good from the previous couple months didn't really matter to the fans in the building that night. You know, Nash started it off with some pre-match mic work, and I thought for two guys that you would not really argue were pretty limited as workers, I thought they had a pretty good match here. Why are you laughing? They are both limited.
Well, no, because that's exactly what I was saying to Ty before we watched it. I said, I'm like, this should be really interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if you got your notes, but...
And then the other thing is that I'm not so sure. Did Goldberg lose the pay-per-view before this one or something? Was Goldberg's streak still alive in the match?
No. Okay. So I was just saying, Nash ended the streak at Starrcade three months before.
All right, I got that.
Yeah.
And now, the only reason that happened, because Nash was pissed that, at that point, like when he was with Vince right before he made the jump, and came to the NWO, he had done like 370 days or something for Vince, and you know, Vince was working 7 days a week back then, you know, and he was pissed that Goldberg got all this hype for having this many wins when he just got off a huge streak right before he got here.
So you're saying there was a lot of resentment of Bill for not paying his dues and just kind of getting the rocket ship.
Not saying that, but that's my view.
Yeah, I mean, look,
I know all the guys in between.
So to me, whenever you had the Goldberg streak, obviously you can't be a wrestler and not job. At some point, it's got to end. But for it to end on Nash at Starrcade and the way that they did it,
Nash sold his finish great, laid there.
Well,
We'll
get to this match, the finish of the match and everything. But the Starrcade match that led up to this, like, to me, that was the worst booking decision WCW ever made. And that right there was the worst thing they could have ever done. And then from there, the wheels really started to come off. But as for this match, I did think the work in it was really good. Nash worked him over to start. I thought Goldberg's selling actually was pretty good. He doesn't do a whole lot of selling as a character.
He's in there with a big dude. He's in there with the booker of the company.
Yeah, I mean, he's selling.
Behave yourself for him.
He finally got on offense after a flying shoulder takedown. Nash did also bump around for Goldberg.
Oh, the flying shoulder was the wrong side of the body.
Was it?
Right, Ty?
Yeah, it was either.
Nash. And he almost landed on Nash's legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's Goldberg. I mean,
yeah. Okay, but you want to blow Nash's knee out right there by going to the wrong side.
No, and we obviously.
But that was Bill.
No, we obviously know Bill Goldberg, and you know, didn't protect people in the ring a lot. I thought the Nash bumping around was pretty good, and the crowd really did come alive. Nash had the really cool spot where he leapfrogged the spear, and the ref took a bump into the corner.
Ty saw that coming, because the ref's never, as soon as the ref was behind him, Ty's like, he's getting a spear.
Yeah, I'm sitting there, I'm like, there's no reason for him to be behind Nash right now. I'm like, that's stone cold.
I was just surprised that it was a leapfrog.
I know. Yeah. No, that's Nash's way of putting himself over in his head. Like, right. Hey, I got a little bit of dexterity.
If you watch Nash, like, in some of the things, like, dude, he got his leg up there. He, I think he went for, like, a big kick or a big boot, and Goldberg docked it, but, like, Nash got his leg up pretty high.
He's got hip problems, not hip problems. You know what I'm saying? Knee problems. He can get his foot up high.
Yeah. So Luger then, who's seconding Nash out of the ring.
Jesus.
He used the chair on Goldberg, but he has it the wrong way. Yep, and gives him one of the weirdest chair shots ever.
Oh, and he had to sell it like he got hit by a shotgun.
Yeah.
He did.
It's like upside down. It's the wrong side. Yeah. It's upside down. It's like, oh my God.
I think the fans in the arena probably were like, oh no, here comes another NWO fuck finish, right? Like, because that's how they did their finishes.
That's what I was expecting, and I had seen it before, obviously.
Instead, Goldberg, like, low-blowed, but also grabbed Nash's junk.
Had a full handful of nuts. Like,
it wasn't really a low blow.
Yo, the bigger white guy you are, the smaller your stuff is. I guarantee it, I've been in jail, I know. Okay. The smaller black guy you are, the way bigger your stuff is.
Yo, fam.
5'4", 120-pound black guys in jail. Oh, my God. Their stuff was like 14 inches long. It was insane.
Yo, fam. So, anyway, Goldberg takes out Nash.
I mean, it's just the truth. I don't see what's so bad about what I said.
No, it's not bad. It's just not necessarily where we were going.
All right, so we took a little hack turn.
We took a little hack turn down below the belt.
Into dropping the soap.
Yeah. So he hits the spear and then the jackhammer 1-2-3. And like you said, Hack, Nash did sell it for a while. He took the finish. Clean as a whistle finish. Pin, you can't say anything about it. He did the job.
But that was Nash baby-facing himself to the rest of the business.
Okay, so you're thinking it was a strategic job there. It's saying, hey, I do jobs.
Well, yeah, after the week before, you cut his title reign off, and then you're going to let him lose to you, whatever. Yeah,
okay, I see what you're saying.
But that's exactly what it was.
The politics are always politicking there.
I've talked to him about it.
No, I mean, hey, man, I believe.
What did I get on his podcast?
Yeah, really, really solid work in the match. It's just about at 3 stars for me.
For those two, the match was way better than I thought it was going to be.
It exceeded expectations for those two. Goldberg kind of felt alive again after this match, but
it's because he had a handful of nuts, probably.
Yeah, there you go. Next up on the show was the 4-way match for the WCW World Heavyweight title. The returning Macho Man Randy Savage is the special ref, and to say he's gigantic here is an understatement. This is the biggest you'll ever see him. Words don't do it justice how big he is. I mean, he is just... He's making a comeback here after being away for a while in 98 and the start of 99. Hack, any memories of Macho Man coming back into the company in WCW at this point, or any interactions with him, or was he just not in your
orbit? Never saw those guys ever.
They were at the cool kids table over in the locker room. Okay. All right. Hogan and Flair did a double turn, as we discussed on the Uncensored 99 show, and DDP is a bit of a tweener himself. So the heel face structure is kind of all off on this match. The only one that's a straight up baby face is Sting. Got a huge reaction coming out. I just got to say, too, guys, shouts out to Gorgeous George. Respectfully speaking, as Drewski would say, she has talent. That's a talented woman right there. What a valet. She came into the business and has a lot of star power.
She did great work in the match.
She was fantastic. 5 stars. Absolutely. Fantastic. Fantastic work. Flair is still the president of WCW at this point, and Hogan, I did put down in my notes, he looks like he fell asleep in the tanning bed. This is like the darkest I've ever seen Hogan.
He looks like he was asleep in the match.
Yeah.
The first half of the match was a straight cluster.
So let's
it was horrible. Guys running into guys, all kinds of crazy, stupid stuff.
Yeah, the dichotomy of this match was all off, but the star power in the ring does get it to another level.
Straight star power.
So Sting and DDP start in the ring while Flair and Hogan are brawling on the outside.
Well, you got to put people that can work inside the ring.
Hogan's moving around at this point like his knees are dust. I mean, he really does not have it at this point as a worker. I'm like, dude, this is not good, like you were saying.
Punch.
I rake.
Oh, dude, the eye rakes were so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I rake. 2 seconds, Flair. Well, I rake you and then give you a reversal and put you up on top.
Yeah, so
I'm like, wow.
Wow. Yeah, wow. Steve Corino, wow.
Yeah, it's always Steve Corino, wow. I don't know another wow.
So Hogan can barely get his leg. I know we're saying Nash got his leg way up for the big boot. Hogan can barely get his up for the big boot here. And then Paige misses with this weird swinging neckbreaker thing and awkwardly tosses Flair over the top rope. Hogan.
Oh, that hard, stiff one to get him all the way over.
So the whole first couple minutes of this match were all off for me. And then.
Oh, cluster.
Cluster, like you were saying. Hogan and then DDP go around the ringside, and Hogan literally helps DDP apply the ring, the figure four around the ring post.
How does he catch every? That is so crazy. That's like the 10th time you said something that's really specific.
Because I know what I'm talking about.
We notice him holding his left foot with his right hand.
What is he doing there, man? I mean, like,
well, you can't do the hole without that.
Yeah.
You can't do the hole without it. It's like that all the time.
Yeah, I've seen Bret Hart do it a bunch, and I don't know if he was ever reaching for a guy.
At the start of it, it happens like that, but you need a little bit of help when you're going down because you're torquing the guy's legs.
Okay.
Maybe Hogan, maybe he doesn't want his legs torqued so much. You know what I mean?
It was real goofy. I didn't like it at all.
Did you notice what happened after that spot?
Sting spot?
Wait. No, after he was doing the figure four into the post, and then Flair goes up to Hogan, tries to pick him up and like do a spot with him, and Hogan yanks away, and then Flair goes to grab him again, and Hogan yanks away again. I'm like, what's going on here? And then I realized the trainer's coming out, and like Flair probably forgot that the trainer was coming out. And he's like, "Yo, dude, I'm sitting.
He wants to do it on the spot with Hogan, but Hogan's like, we're set up to go.
Okay,
yeah, so like this is me. This
maybe
is
that was part of his selling of the work shoot thing they did.
Whatever it was, but like Flair tries to get him, and Hogan's like, dude, no, like I'm supposed to stand here. Like,
yeah, Hogan was selling the leg, and he looks so old and leathery here. Bischoff,
I didn't feel that way.
Bischoff sells it by coming out on the ramp, and he's like, oh no, are you okay?
Wait, did you see he did like a double take? He's like, should I go? Shouldn't I go?
He woke up like from a nap and forgot the spot and was like, wait, am I supposed to be out here? Yeah,
what the heck was that, man? I was like, what is this? This match is off the rails at this point. And then
it started to get way better.
And then it starts to get way better. So it now essentially becomes a three-way dance, and it improves a lot without the Hulkster. Some really cool stuff, including a really dangerous-looking tombstone by DDP on Sting. I kind of was like, yo, man, what's going on here with this one? But the crowd really wanted Sting here, so the decision to go with DDP is kind of even more confusing. And Macho's not really doing a whole lot as the ref in this match. He's kind of staying out of it. What did you expect, though?
No,
I know, but
he counted.
He did.
So
eventually, very, very slow.
So he drags.
Oh. His count compared to the count in the Ray Ray match.
The Speedy Gonzalez round.
would be twice.
Yeah.
Twice the amount of time.
So the finish of the match, Macho drags Flair, who has Sting in a figure four, into position.
And they got me.
And he delivers a huge elbow on Flair. So when Macho came back, I don't know if his hips or his knees were bad, but he really starts to drop, like, shoot elbows on people. If you go back and watch this 99 run, he drops all his weight right on him.
Stiff.
That was a stiff shoot elbow drop, brother. So then DDP hits Flair with a diamond cutter, and he became the World Heavyweight Champion for the first time. The crowd kind of went mild. I wouldn't say they exploded or anything. DDP celebrates with the belt.
They were shocked, but they got back into it after that. It was more like a, oh.
Yeah, DDP was the only guy in the match that had never yet won the world title. Correct. But look, obviously DDP had a great career, a great person. Everything that he's done for the business, things that he's done for Jake the Snake and other wrestlers.
A lot of guys he's gotten jobs for.
He's gotten jobs for people. He's a great dude. And he truly worked his way up to that spot to get over. In 97 and 98, he was the first guy to really like spurn the NWO and not join them. And he got really over in doing so. He was boys with Nash and Hall. He was neighbors of Eric Bischoff. And he was friends with so many people in the business. But, Hack, I got to ask you something. As a guy in the car, when you guys are making the towns and everything, and you're talking the business, when they put the belt on Dallas and the other company has Steve Austin, what are you thinking when they made that decision to put the world title on DDP?
Nobody cared.
You didn't care?
No.
Really?
Yeah, why?
Because to me, I mean, like,
correct. We don't care.
You don't care. Business. To me, I'm thinking,
you know, mildly, like, hey, if a guy's like booking wise, go ahead, Ty.
We as in you saying we don't care, or you as in you don't care? Has other people said stuff and or just not you, or you don't care?
No, it was never a big deal, like, oh my god, do you believe DDP's got the belt?
Okay.
You know, well, it was never like that.
The reason I ask, and I'm not trying to bury Dallas Page at all. I'm not. Like I said, he worked his ass off to get where he is. He put in the work.
Unbelievably worked. That match that he had with Chavo Guerrero.
Yeah.
That match put him on the map.
Yeah.
That was the match.
He had a lot of really good matches, and he spent a lot of time. Mick Foley talks about this in his book, where he's like filming matches to watch his matches later. And he really getting into the business late into his early 30s when he started working to then work his way up to be a world champion. Certainly commendable and all that. But the only reason I asked about putting the belt on him, the championship match, the main event match in a company is the biggest thing that moves tickets, moves revenue.
And, oh my god, are you talking Sami Zayn to me right now?
Well, Sami's over. He moves stuff. But
Dallas is moving stuff.
I'm not
gonna let go of the Sami Zayn thing yet.
We never will with you either.
I still need to do some more homework on him from back in the day.
You do. You need to do your homework.
Then maybe I'll change my mind.
What I wanna ask is, when you're riding in the cars with the boys and the champion is the one who really dictates the business, you're telling me you don't second guess who the champion is at certain points? No? All right.
No. Not me.
Not you. Not you.
Well, it doesn't really affect you. Really, you know what I'm saying? Really, is that what you're
especially
saying?
Especially like, in ECW, it was all family. How do I, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I didn't care if I had the belt. I didn't have the belt. It made no difference to me.
Okay,
I mean, it just made no difference to me.
Yeah, I'm just thinking maybe if
and guys- whatever they're doing in the other company, you have to understand because I'm so inner hack. You know, then that. I don't know as much about the business that I do now that I probably should have known then. But who knew? When Dallas has the belt, everybody in the business knows that that company's going under soon. So they don't know who it's going to... The company's under within 2 years.
Yes, but at this point, they still were cruising along. They were. You sold 17,000 tickets. You're still getting... comparative to shows on cable, you're still getting really good ratings, and you're still owned by Turner. So, like, I don't think the company was going out of business to a lot of people at this point. But clearly, as 2000 starts to go, people are really starting.
As a fan, maybe, but as a wrestler, we're all thinking that booking is so crazy up there. Before I got there, everybody knew the booking was crazy.
Yeah. Okay.
And the book changed the minute my first day there.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, yeah, that's interesting perspective. I always like to get your takes on things because I just don't know where that is at times. So that was Spring Stampede 1999. Certainly, I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the show. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was a really good show. A lot of star
considering
power.
It, and it's. It's funny when I watch it, I forget that this was 24, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're watching a different style then.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, the Rey Mysterio and Billy Kidman match, that's nothing compared to what an opening match is now at AEW.
Yeah, no.
It's like they're doing so much more and so much everything nowadays. Not saying it's better or worse.
It's different.
Just creating that picture in your head.
Yeah.
No, they're much more like the Hoovy match in the beginning now. Spot, 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 spot.
Yeah. Now, I really enjoyed the show. Certainly, if you guys haven't, definitely check it out because it's a really enjoyable card. And the Hack Bam Bam match definitely is super awesome.
Yeah, I was God.
Yeah. Well, always put yourself
I had
over.
A great match.
You did?
Just say, almost, I don't know, it's very close to that, and the three-way dance with me, Stevie, and Funk, our very first pay-per-view. No. I was super on that night, too.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, because that is our topic for next week. We are
seriously?
Watching. Yes, we are watching Barely Legal 1997.
No, not doing it.
What?
Insane.
You do what I say, brother.
Yes, sir. Todd, sir.
All right. Going to our listener questions here. As always, send them into sandmanpod@gmail.com. We got a great batch for you here this week. So, first up, Uncle Howard is writing in again.
Uncle Howard. Love you, Uncle Howard.
Uncle Howard. What's up, gentlemen? It's Uncle Howard back in the mix, Hack.
Where is he from?
I don't know. He didn't. Uncle Howard, you're going to have to give us a location next week if you write.
Yeah,
in
I want to know where to report you as a pedophile. The Uncle Howard thing.
Yo, what are you talking about?
Stop just messing with okay. you, but Uncle Howard. No. I mean, come on.
Apparently, he's like trying to come back in WWE. Uncle Howdy.
Oh, Uncle Howdy. Okay. All right. Jesus, man. What the heck, bro? All right. So. Here we go. This is the question. Get the question out. Here we go. You've wrestled Kevin Thorne, the spooky vampire.
Oh, my God. He is so stiff.
You caned the shit out of a zombie. Are there any other paranormal beings you wouldn't want to take on? For example, goblins are really quick and agile and might be hard to get a hold of for a white Russian leg sweep. And a mummy might curse you with his amulet from afar. Thanks. I love this show.
All right, let me think for a second here how okay. I want to respond.
Yeah, he's thinking.
So it's basically like, who's the hardest ghoul goblin fake character
what's a
ghoul
to
probably
to a goblin?
Beat up? Yeah.
Yeah. What's a ghoul to
Frodo. I could definitely beat up Frodo. If he don't have the ring.
Okay, so
before he gets the ring.
I think he's saying who would be the hardest
to
fight.
Did I misunderstand the question?
So Frodo, if Frodo had the ring.
Are you like, you can't believe I just said that?
I don't fully understand the question.
All right, good. I don't feel so bad that we're all like.
I think he's basically asking who or what
like
would be.
Like a Sasquatch? Would you not want to wrestle?
I love Sasquatches. No, I would. Light a fire and sit down with him and cook a fish with him, a Sasquatch. Not a Wookiee.
Are they not one in the same?
All right.
Probably.
We'll have to get back to you on that, Uncle Howard, and we're sorry for the accusations that Hack unjustly threw you away.
Uncle Howard!
Next up here, Chris from Allentown. Hi, team. Big fan of the show. I've never heard a podcast kick off so quickly. You guys have great chemistry. I used to go to arena shows when I was in seventh grade, and they were unbelievable. Still have yet to replicate that experience. Standing in line for 5 hours to get a bleacher seat was well worth it. Quick question on Too Cold Scorpio, since he was your tag partner. How tough was Too Cold? On the North Korea Dark Side of the Ring episode, he and others claimed Too Cold beat up Road Warrior Hawk.
Oh, yeah.
The Road Warriors had a pretty tough reputation, if not the toughest. How tough was Too Cold Scorpio, Hack?
At one point, there could be, if it was a, if Too Cold or Tracy Smothers was in the locker room, if Too Cold wasn't, then Tracy Smothers was the toughest dude in the locker room, or RVD, and if they weren't, it was the other one.
Well, all right, there you hear it, man.
So Too Cold was like legit the baddest of the baddest, yeah.
Him and Tracy.
Too Cold... Vader took him as a young boy, threw him into a dojo in Japan, like the Stu Hart of dojos. Vader threw him over there for 2 years and said, go learn, boy.
Wow.
He came out an animal. Hack story right here.
Okay.
We're wrestling. We only did this build. It was like the University of Pennsylvania. Let's say... like around 34th and Market, Ty at University of Pennsylvania, or 34th and Walnut, whatever.
What, the
Palestra? No. The Palestra's down by 15th, right? On 15th?
It's close.
All right, so whatever.
Right around there.
So Scorp comes into the locker room, and Todd puts me against him, because this is when Todd was still like half-ass boss. And I'm so stupid, I'm like, hey, buddy, we like to lay it in around here. He's like, oh, okay. Oh my God, the first uppercut, he almost made me die. He hit me with an uppercut, and he knew. He's looking at me. I've never been in a gym in my life. And Scorp's like, well, let me smarten this kid up with the first shot.
You told him you had laid it in here, and that's what he responded.
He laid it in. I'm like, okay, can you ease the frick up on me, dude? I'm dying here.
We ease it up here. Yeah.
Great question, Chris from Allentown. Mikey from Sligo Island.
Sligo Island? I've never heard of that.
I don't know either.
That's where Frodo's from.
Oh, okay. Yeah, watch out. You might be using the ring on you. What would you make your persona gimmick if you couldn't be the beer-guzzling, chain-smoking, kendo-stick-swinging extreme icon?
I have no idea. Probably Frodo. Dude, he would work. Frodo would work. You got the green skin or something. That would have went over huge in the mid-90s.
Yes.
With the plumbers and all those guys back then. Yeah,
you would have been up north working for Vince's. Frodo.
Sincere.
With a ring, but only when you had the ring. If you didn't have the ring, you would be weak. So you'd have to have the ring at all points in time.
Oh, my God. I can set up so many spots.
Yeah, this is a good gimmick here.
Ring on a pole match.
Boom. Money.
Well, I mean, you went...
Main event of Mania. Ring on a pole. Frodo and Diesel.
Hogan.
Yeah, Frodo and Hogan. Main event anywhere in any arena.
I mean, you went from the wetsuit to the beer thing. Like, was there any other ideas floating around, like, when you would change to that? Or, did you even know?
I just wanted to be a pro wrestler. And then I just happened to get lucky that Todd Gordon finally convinced Paul to... He's like, Paul, the guy sits in the back, drinks beer, smokes cigarettes... This is how Todd will say the conversation went. He says, Paul, the guy sits in the back, because Paul didn't like me at first. Paul actually said to Todd, your boy just doesn't have it. Todd said to him, let him go out there and just be him. The bar brawler, and that's like my real life story. You have no idea how many times I've been arrested in a bar room brawl. And Todd's like, just go out there and be him, and that's how I got over it. I don't know if that would if I answered the question.
No, you definitely did. Next up, Chris C. Hey, Hackintosh, love the podcast. Keep up the good work. I remember watching Francine and Beulah back when I was 11 years old. And I think they kicked off puberty for me. My question for Hack is...
Almost me too, kid.
Wasn't just you, buddy.
Both my sons here. Franny, you got them all.
My question for Hack is, who was the better hang, Francine or Beulah?
But back in the day, I never hung with any of them because we were in different circles. Back in the locker room, you don't get to know that much about them. But after that, me and Franny are best friends now. Yeah. I love Franny. She loves me. We travel a lot together.
Did she hear how you buried her last week with the filters? That was uncalled for, man.
Oh, I do it all the time. She posts stuff and I go on, Franny, take off the 3 filters. I do it all the time on her Facebook posts.
We love you, Franny. Keep up the great work with your podcast. And yeah.
No, I heart Franny.
I heart Franny. Last up here, as always, this guy writes us in every week. Franny's favorite as well. You're very over with Franny, and here we go. Kevin from Dayton, Ohio writes in, why did you get a tattoo of yourself? That's his question.
Okay. So I have this philosophy at that point because I'm thinking everything in the world's been done in professional wrestling. So I'm trying to think of anything that I could do that could be the first ever. So ladder match, cigarette, beer, not the cane, but you're always looking for something to be first. And I'm thinking about, wait a minute, let me put a tattoo on my arm. And then when I put it up, it's a tattoo on myself as I'm bleeding after I smash a can on my head before I even get into the ring. So I go in there like that, I'm bleeding on the tattoo. And I'm like, no, but I've never seen that everywhere. I'm getting it.
Well, it's certainly like the coolest tattoo. It's awesome, and I can't wait to get one of my own. Nice Tosh face.
I've seen way cooler tattoos. A couple people have really great tattoos of me on their calves. I remember I sent you a picture. One chick a couple weeks ago had a tattoo of me, RVD, and like Sabu on her calf.
Yeah, we put it up on our Instagram.
Did I put that? Yeah, did we put that up?
Okay, yeah.
It's a little bit strange, and it's really cool when somebody comes up to you and says, I think you're so badass, it's so cool, and you've changed my life so much, I'm going to put a tattoo on my body.
Yeah.
You have to respect that.
Nah.
Because that's a connection that you can't possibly explain anywhere, you know? It's different.
No, I hear you, man. That was a great question, Kevin. As always,
Kevin!
Please send in listener questions to sandmanpod@gmail.com. Give us a follow at sandmanpod on Twitter and the Sandman Podcast on Instagram. We will join you next week for our Barely Legal 1997 show. But before we do,
I'm hyping, man.
This is the hype before. I have it down here in my notes.
I'm throwing out a reminder. Thank you.
Producer Rolls, I appreciate it.
Let me think of some answers here. No, I'm kidding.
As always, Cane of the Week, Hack. Who are you giving a kendo shot to this week?
The guy that won the Boston Marathon, because he totally should have won the record. He should have beat the record today. He beat his record from last year. The problem was he was so far in front of everybody else that he didn't get pushed for the record. Mm. And then I'm thinking something that came across my timeline ever. If he breaks that record, then he makes a certain amount of money. You get paid to break records at the Boston Marathon.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so maybe in his mind, he didn't want to break it this year, maybe next year, because he's one of those Ethiopian runners.
Okay.
And they just roll off like titles and that stuff.
Okay.
And then...
Toast of the Week.
Oh, to the... And I hate Ty for saying it, the guy that made UFC 100, 200, 300, that dude's a beast.
Jim Miller. Yeah, I didn't know you were going to make him the toast of the league, but he deserves it.
Well, if you made those three, you're the man.
Okay.
Well, oh, and he got the crap beat out of him too by the green guy, was it?
Yeah, Bobby Green.
The green guy.
Oh, wow. He got worn out, but...
And he made it through the whole fight.
And that's like making WrestleMania like 5, 15, 25, 35 to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. All right, guys, as always, join us next week. We are going to be talking Barely Legal 1997. It was the first ECW pay-per-view ever. And you can follow us on all our social medias. Like, share, review, and we'll be back to you next week. Take care.
Peace.
Peace.